of lighthouses and hats. Ladies on Saturday nights stroll the boulevards in trousers and mink coats, leading baby leopards on a leash, where morning newspapers cost 5 cents and evening newspapers too, and people wait in queues for unexhausting hours to witness other people pressing their hands into juicy cement. A trivial happening in Hollywood, therefore, is hugely less trivial than if the identical event occurs in Cincinnati or Jersey City, and an important one incalculably more important. So when the Oh Hippie bubble burst, even people who were not stockholders devoured the Los Angeles dispatches, and overnight Oh Hippie became as familiar a catchword as quintuplets and the nine old men. This is not to belittle the event itself. In collapsing, Oh Hippie, paradoxically, stood on its own feet as a major calamity. And while the issue was not fought in the courts, owing to little attorney Anatole Ruig's foresight, a veritable battle royal raged in print and on the streets. A wonderfully martial time it was, with Solly Spaeth's lanky son firing long-range bursts from the editorial offices of the Los Angeles Independent, and unhappy stockholders alternately howling and scowling at the iron gate of Sans Souci, behind which Solly sat imperturbably counting up his millions. It was really the Eastern diagnostician's fault, for Solly would never have settled in California had the doctor not recommended its climate, its golf, and its sunbaths. Imagine Solomon Spaeth being content to do nothing but squint along the mountain range of his belly as he lolled in the sun. It was fated that Solly should begin restlessly ruminating his capital, which was lying as idly as he in various impregnable but unexciting banks. So Solly rose, covered his nakedness, looked hopefully about, and found Rhys Jardon and little Anatole Ruig. And it was from their happy fusion that the celebrated and subsequently notorious Oh Hippie hydroelectric development emerged. Solly met Winnie Moon at the same time, but his interest in Winnie was aesthetic rather than commercial, so that is a different part of the story. Solly was never a man to neglect the arts. Winnie became his protege, and it is fascinating to recall that her career dated from that sensitive juxtaposition of souls. The organization and development of Oh Hippie Hydroelectric took genius in those days, when heavy industry was prostrate and premonitory rumblings of holding company legislation were audible in Washington. But Solly had genius. Nevertheless, he could not have succeeded without Rhys Jardon, who played the role of industrial angel with superb technique. Rhys, that sterling yachtsman, golfer, gymnast, and collector of objets de sport, was indispensable to Solly for entirely different reasons. He possessed the necessary supplemental capital, he carried the magic Jardon name, and he knew nothing whatever about big business. When Oh Hippie moved from the financial pages into the offices of the homicide detail of the Los Angeles Central Detective Bureau, the case, already precious, became a managing editor's dream. And Fitzgerald went slightly mad. Fitz had been a classmate of Rhys Jardon's, Harvard 08, and he was also technically Walter Spaeth's employer. But the setup was so alluring. The floods, Winnie Moon and her scented chimpanzee, that provocative little detail of the molasses, the old Italian rapier, the scores of thousands of potential murderers, that Fitz shut his eyes to the ethical questions involved and let fly with both presses. Of course, every newspaper man in Los Angeles became wall-eyed with civic pride and professional joy, and the items that flooded the papers dealt with everything from Winnie's dainty bathing habits to an old still picture of Pink, bow in hand, as Chief Yellow Pony from that forgotten epic of the plains, Red Indian. They even dug out of the morgue a photograph of Rhys Jardon winning the 1928 Southern California Amateur Golf Championship. One feature writer, running out of material, fell back upon statistics. He pointed out that, as usual, nearly